Earth and Sky.
We tried to put between the covers of one book how we evolved, how we got to be a brilliant, dominant animal, changing the land surface of the planet, changing the atmosphere, changing the oceans, and in the process, starting to saw off the limb we're sitting on.
You're listening to Stanford biologist Paul Ehrlich, and this is Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science. Ehrlich was perhaps best known for his 1960s classic called The Population Bomb. He was one of the first to speak out about the need to maintain a balance between Earth's human population and our use of natural resources. Earth Sky's Jorge Salazar interviewed Paul Ehrlich on the science behind how we humans came to dominate planet Earth.
Dr. Ehrlich, welcome to Earth Sky's Clear Voices for Science.
It's great to be here.
It's been 40 years now since your book, The Population Bomb, was released, and the world's changed a lot since then, of course. How has your view of the world changed since then?
Well, of course, I was 5 when I wrote that book, and in the past 40 years, I'm afraid I've gotten more depressed because, in many ways, The Population Bomb was much too optimistic a book. I mean, think about it for a moment. What didn't we know 40 years ago? We had no idea that the ozone layer was in danger. We didn't know that biodiversity was being wiped out, particularly in the tropical forests. When we wrote about climate change and the population bomb, we weren't sure whether there was going to be heating or cooling in the short term, and we thought that it would be the end of the current century before there were problems with heating, because we didn't know about half of the greenhouse gas emissions. In other words, we only knew about carbon dioxide. And of course, although we wrote about the danger of massive new epidemics, AIDS hadn't appeared at that time. So basically, the book was too optimistic, except in the area of food, where from the point of view of large-scale famines that attract attention, it was a little too pessimistic, although not very.
Well, I'd like to talk about a new book which you've co-authored called The Dominant Animal, Human Evolution and the Environment. What's new here? What's it all about?
Well, it does two things. First of all, it was designed to fill a hole in our education system. Even at Stanford, you can get a bachelor's degree with knowing essentially nothing about science, not knowing where we came from, not knowing where our food comes from, not knowing what we're doing to our life support systems. And so I started teaching a course on that open to all Stanford students. And so we tried to put between the covers of one book how we evolved, how we got to be a brilliant, dominant animal, changing the land surface of the planet, changing the atmosphere, changing the oceans, and in the process, starting to saw off the limb we're sitting on. In other words, our brilliance has given us dominance, but we haven't learned to act towards our environment, so we're wrecking our life support systems. And it's really important that everybody understand that, because if we have a chance, when our kids are going to have any chance for a long-term future, we've got to change our ways.
And I'd like to maybe to talk a little bit about something that you touched on here. How did we get here? How did we find ourselves with the environment that we're living with?
Well, first of all, genetically, we were a social animal that originally lived in trees, which gave us some of our most important characteristics, like eyes in the front of the head, binocular vision, and we used to snatch insects in bushes, and so we have very dexterous fingers. It's a good thing that we came down out of the trees, because you can't build a civilization in the trees. It's really hard to, say, mine ores and smelt them if you live in trees. And we became an increasingly smart social animal and did a wonderful job of taking over our environment, basically. So we came first through a sequence of genetic evolution, and then we get smart enough. What really put us over the top and made us the dominant animal on the planet is our cultural evolution. That is the change in the non-genetic information that we have. We have very little information in our genes. We only have something like 20,000 protein-coding genes. There's more information in the structure of a 747 than there is in our DNA. It's been manipulation of that non-genetic information, the starting up of learning to farm, and then learning, and not just we have a wonderful speech, but learning to write it down so we could pass it around. That is the literacy revolution, followed by the printing revolution and the communications revolution. We have, with our non-genetic information, our culture has put us in a position to actually control virtually everything that happens on the planet. And I wish we were.
Can scientists really tell when the shift occurred, when human cultures, you know, went from perhaps living in trees to being the player on the planet? We are something I think that listeners may not quite get.
Well, go
ahead.
Sure. No, there is some controversy, but certainly you can think of some major things that happened. For instance, 65 million years ago, an asteroid hit the planet and the dinosaurs died out, and that gave a chance for the mammals, that includes us, to get somewhere. We started building a complex culture at the time when we were, before we split into human beings and chimps, maybe 7 million years ago. Chimpanzees have some culture. They different groups of chimpanzees learn from each other how to fish for termites and open nuts and so on in different ways. But we're the ones who really took up culture. And at first, our culture, which scientists trace through stone tools over a few million years, evolved very slowly. We'd have the same kind of stone tools for hundreds of thousands of years. But sometime, and it's controversial, between 50 and 100,000 years ago, there was a culture, what's sometimes called the Great Leap Forward or the Cultural Revolution, where suddenly, instead of just having stone tools, we began to get fine needles and obviously sew good clothes and do the cave art that's so famous as in Lascaux and so on. So that changed our culture dramatically. And shortly after that, about 10,000 years ago, we started to practice agriculture, and there's no question that we would not be having this conversation if we hadn't practiced agriculture, because that was the time that it became possible for one family to grow enough food to support several families. So you could have specialization, you could have university professors and talk show hosts and so on who don't grow their own food. And so the agricultural revolution maybe was the single biggest step in that whole course. Otherwise, we'd just be like another big mammal operating on the planet.
You've been listening to biologist Paul Ehrlich, Bing Professor of Population Studies at Stanford University. His recent book is called The Dominant Animal, Human Evolution and the Environment. To subscribe to this and other free science podcasts, visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Deborah Bird, and you're listening to Earth Skies, Clear Voices for Science.
We're at earthsky.org.